question, Mr. Kerry Shott. My name's John Colvin, and at one stage I was the director of Sydney Water. I remember also at one stage we were looking, or Sydney Water was looking at building a new dam. And from memory it was Welcome Dam, and I noticed in the presentation that a new dam wasn't put up. And so I'd be interested in your comments in relation to whether a new dam is feasible, possible, or has been discounted forever. Thanks.
The new dam at Welcome Reef has been revisited and is not on the agenda. And the reason for that is that with the decline in rain, it just simply won't work anymore. It was always a dam that was relatively shallow and very widespread in its area. The Welcome Reef Dam is sort of in behind Braidwood, and that area of the state is not getting the rainfall that it once did. So I'm told that the chances of putting a dam in there and getting water in it of any substance is low. And one of the things that Peter mentioned about the climate is the increase in temperature. And one of the things that's happening with dam storages with the increase in temperature is we're just getting more evaporation. So a shallow dam over a large area with not much water in it isn't going to do the trick. So, John, that's the reason why that was taken off the agenda.
And if I could just add to that, we have a model of the Welcome Reef Dam in Googong, which is over in the next catchment, a dam built by the Commonwealth to supply Canberra and the region. It hasn't filled for some time, and the predictions are it will never fill again. They are now pumping water from the Murrumbidgee, another catchment over, to get water into it to use it as a storage. But in that rain shadow, the declining rainfall in that region has meant that dam just probably won't fill from natural causes again.
G'day, David. Graham Dooley, United Utilities. Free plug for David. He was our lawyer on a very complicated project finance deal we did a few years ago for $100 million that had those magic infrastructure bonds in it, and David's a damn good lawyer when it comes to that sort of stuff, so I commend... We're still making money out of it, David. The question to both panel members. There's been a lot of talk of changing human behaviour, denying people rights of access to the greatest city in Australia. People want to come here, they're voting with their feet and their bums and coming here and sitting down and making lives and families. They're creating households and they're spreading northwest and southwest in droves because they want to. Is it realistic to change that human behaviour? Is it realistic to demand that people use less and less and less water in their homes? I note that you can hose your driveway in French champagne, you can hose it in milk, you can hose it in Coca-Cola, and you can hose it of those dreaded product known to mankind, bottled water that you buy in a supermarket, but you can't hose it with water out of the tap. Is it realistic in this day and age, and with the popularity of Sydney, notwithstanding all the climate issues and all of the ecological issues associated with the water cycle, that we actually now want to control human behaviour, we want to control land development? Surely the emphasis is on the supply side. We've just got to work out ways of making new water out of our urban stormwater and sewage and oceans and lakes and rivers and underground supplies. I'd be interested in both speakers' view, and I'm sure the audience would be interested in.
Look, I think if we could get the pricing right, we could sort out a lot of those difficulties, but we at the moment have a sort of a postage stamp approach to pricing where everyone's paying the same amount, whereas some people are in quite costly areas to supply and others are in much cheaper areas. And it would seem to me that as we go down the track, we might start getting differential pricing to reflect the real costs of supplying in various areas. I think the other element to your question is we've all been caught short with the climate shift. I think we should have predicted probably better the impacts of growing population on our big urban areas. And governments, perhaps all around the country, relied on the fact that if they could stop a few leaking taps, they could cope with that growth. And also they rather liked the revenue implications of taking the water price but not having to build new infrastructure. They hit the wall, but they hit the wall really hard because of the climate shift. So we're now struggling to bring on those extra augmentations. I think I think it is reasonable not to be wasting water on some of the sillier uses. If we priced it properly, that probably wouldn't be happening quite so much.
I think we've really got to try and get the prices to properly reflect the cost of things a little more. And while we're all agreed that uniform prices across Sydney seems to be the way utilities get their charges, it doesn't allow price signals to get through about which are our more costly areas to service. And since the Water Industry Competition Bill and impending access regimes for Sydney Water, where the private sector can access our sewerage and water pipes, which I should say we're in favour of, we've done a lot more work on what our costs are across the city, and Sydney Water has a much better understanding now than it would have had 5 or 10 years ago about what its different costs are. So we are in a position to be able to price things more appropriately. I'm not particularly in favour of telling people they can or can't do things, but I think some better price signals would go a long way. And just in terms of water restrictions, I've always tended to be of the Malcolm Turnbull variety of if you want to pay for it, then go for it. But when you think about something like water, which we do have a constraint over and it does have some environmental consequences around it, I do think we need to have some emphasis on water efficient use, which doesn't mean you can't wash your car, but once water restrictions are lifted, but it should mean that we don't do sort of totally stupid things like take potable water to hose down the drive in large quantities and so forth. So I think we need to have a bit of a debate about where we cut off the water restrictions and focus on water efficient use. Just one statistic for you. At the moment, Sydney's using the same amount of water it did in 1974. And that amount of water saving, we think about 17% of it is in permanent water saving measures that have been put in. And the rest of it is related to the water restrictions that people are abiding by.
My name's Jenny Tate and I'm from Blackmores. And you may be interested to know Blackmores just won the Australian Sustainability Award as Small Company of the Year. But more to the point, I'm building a new site, which I expect to occupy in about March 08. And I'm making decisions now on water recycling versus main usage and whatever for the site. And the difficulty is understanding where the price of water is going to go to be able to justify an investment. Most of these investments look at payback periods in excess of 40 years if you take modelling from existing prices or inflation. So you've given me one data point, which I thought was very interesting. The price of household water will increase 23% when you put the desalination plant online. So I've got a couple of questions, but all related to price. Do you see that the absorbing that cost will be passed through to the households, or do you think there will be the commercial sector will bear a higher proportion of that cost increase? And where do you see the price of water for commercial sector being in 10 years or whatever? Just give me another data point. And the last thing is the discharge costs. Very interesting discussion because we are looking at black water and grey water recycling. So any predictions on what we may face in terms of discharge cost trends?
What the price of water goes up by is determined by the independent regulator IPART. So when Dr Keating was here, I noticed that... he gave a very good paper on pricing, actually, I think, but it's really a question for him and it's one that IPART will need to address relatively shortly. On the work that Sydney Water's doing, we do think that the price of water will go up by that sort of percentage, but when that happens, it's not going to be immediately, but maybe 2008 or 2009. I think just the simple law of economics is as the supply gets more constrained, so we go to more expensive sources of water. So over time, the one thing you can bet on, I think, is water prices aren't ever going to come down, and they'll tend to go up with CPI plus some scarcity factor for us getting supply from more expensive places, like the sea, for example. As to the cost of trade waste, that varies with how what's in your trade waste, and you probably need to have a chat to somebody from Sydney Water who can help you with that.
And I think the other thing to add to that answer is the other uncertainty is the likelihood of a carbon tax of some sort, which is going to alter the price signals from recycling and desal, but they'll be all going upwards.
Kevin Young from Hanna Water. This is a question for Peter or Kerry. We were just looking at the... it was interesting with Kerry's diagram of the water balance, looking at the issues for the future and the options that are available, the hockey stick diagram. It's interesting to note that as you move along the hockey stick, you also go to higher technology and higher energy options for the future. And as we grow as a city and we see more and more the way forward is the higher energy, I'm interested in your views of how that will roll out in not just a what we call the water balance at the moment, but whether there's a water and energy balance that we've got to look at, and because the energy situation is driving the climate change, which is causing the lack of water, and our solutions to be the future, looking 20 and 30 years ahead, are focusing on higher energy. How do you see that coming out in a, Peter, in a national policy perspective?
I'm not sure that it's really got through in a national policy all that much as yet, but it seems to me water planning and energy planning are now integrally linked. All of these strategies we've got for our cities are more energy dependent, and you've got to build the energy and the greenhouse gas implications into those cost-benefit assessments. And since we're not pricing those things properly yet, it makes it quite difficult. But I think over the next 5 years you'll see us moving to price those things in. And, of course, that's one of the reasons why half these schemes don't get on the radar for the rural water, because the costs of pumping or treatment just blow it out of the water from the price structures that rural water users have got.
One of the concerns about desalination is the high energy cost associated with it, and it's actually the same sort of technology as the technology for recycling to the highest level, reverse osmosis. It's more energy intensive because salt molecules are smaller and you have to push them, to be technical about it, you have to push them harder through the small holes to get the molecules out. To address that, the planning approval for desalination is such that we must power the desalination plant with green energy, and there is enough currently in the grid for us to do that, even with a larger size plant. But Sydney Water entering in with such a large purchase is likely to send those sorts of prices upwards. So the costs of green energy will start rising. The other thing I'd say is that we are... Sydney Water is a big energy user because we pump heavy stuff around the place, and we are spending a lot of time on trying to develop our own renewable sources as much as we can. Sewage treatment plants produce methane, which we use in cogen plants to produce electricity, and we're also putting small mini turbines in some of our heavy flow downward pipes to generate renewable energy from those. So that's got our own energy use to round about between 20 and 25% renewable, and we'll keep working on that, as I'm sure other big energy users are doing similar.
Tim Besley, mostly former these days, which is rather better than being past, I think. But I wanted to ask a question of Kerry because of something Peter said. Peter talked about stormwater, and I got the impression he was differentiating stormwater from recycling, which is treating sewage and so on. Does the Sydney Water's plan include harvesting of stormwater, or is recycling, as I think I am understanding you to put it, simply treating sewage and other waste, other grey and black water, as distinct from capturing stormwater?
Thanks, Tim. Stormwater in this city is very difficult because it's not easy to control institutionally. It's largely the responsibility of local councils, and any of you who are concerned in the property sector will know that trying to get agreement from one council is difficult, two councils is almost impossible, and when you're trying to herd them together to do something like manage stormwater in their catchments, it's very difficult indeed. The Sydney Water only owns 5% of the stormwater network, so we're just a player like the local councils in this. We are working at a government level to try and get some of the institutional difficulties sorted through. Stormwater is useful for irrigation purposes, but frankly, stormwater that's been on roads is full of heavy metals from fuel residues. So it's not that useful for drinking purposes. Macquarie Goodman are looking at a development where on the old Wonderland site where there's a lot of big warehouses going in, and they're planning to capture rainwater there on these very big roofs. And if you do that before it hits the ground, there's a possibility that that could be taken across to Prospect Reservoir as an additional water supply. And matters catching stormwater before it gets onto the ground in large quantities will work. And there are little schemes here and there that are looking at that. But in an urban context, stormwater is actually quite difficult. And stormwater runs downhill, and it is actually an environmental flow too. So I'm not sure what would happen to the harbour, for example, if we suddenly started stopping the stormwater run into it.